I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
I think that was Marianne Williamson. And you all heard some of the language and even some of the issues that she raised, you know, in that blurb there that came from the debate in Detroit I think she was on Wednesday night. And you all know that some of those topics, the reparations question, you know, that's a hot issue. And for some of these candidates, you know, I think some of them are trying to play the game with us and using that as a card to lure people in to vote for them. And some are genuinely honest about it. Bennett might be wrong, but maybe she might be genuinely honest about it, because she, you know, she's not a career politician. She's a, I think she's a writer. She's an author, something of that nature. Mm-hmm. So that she raised some issues that are very, very, very important. But here is the thing, though. She's actually trying her best to put in place some critical things that warrant our attention, that we need to be thinking about. And she's talking about environmental racism, whole lot of things. And I think some of these issues might attract millennials and maybe Generation Zers to support her cause or even get more involved in the election. We're going to talk about that today, about getting Generation Zers and the group before them, millennials, African-American ones now, involved in this conversation. And y'all know my thing. I love to talk about religion. Love to talk about the black church. I love to talk about the Islamic community. I like to talk about the black Hebrew, Israelite, Jews. You know, I like to talk about everybody that comprises the fabric. You know, the fact that the African-American religious community is a very interesting tapestry. So I want to put us all on the table. All us on the table. Nobody is safe. Nobody is safe. Everybody can get called out at home plate. Ain't nobody safe. I want to put all of us in play as we talk about what can our religious communities do to get our African-American millennials and Generation Zers more involved in the conversation. I got two guests with me that are going to help us get through this conversation. Y'all just don't know. We have Atlanta is a place, it's a significant brain trust. Let me tell you who I got with me. I got Andre Lord. I got Andre Lord with me, and I have Chris Weems with me. And what I'm going to do. See that? Yeah. I'm going to let each of them introduce himself and tell you a little bit about themselves and what they're doing. And then we're going to actually get into this conversation. You all know the number. Put us on speed dial. I got a couple of lines open. Have some callers already waiting. The number is 404-892-2703. 404-892-2703. Put us on speed dial. Andre, talk about yourself. Chris, let them know who you are.
Oh, man. Thank you, Dr. Bennett, for this opportunity. I'm Andre Lloyd. I serve as the senior pastor of the Westside Community Church here in Atlanta, Georgia, 2114 Martin Luther King Jr. Drive. Go to the website, check us out. And I've been there now for 6 years, serving that predominantly African-American culture in the predominantly African-American community there right off of MLK. Around the Dixie Hills neighborhood, West End neighborhood, just that whole west side of Atlanta, Georgia, the whole Peyton Forest neighborhood is where we are. And so I want to give a big shout out to all my members on that side of town. Big shout out to my lovely wife who supports me in that ministry. And big shout out to Dr. Bennett coming through the ITC, being a part of your class, and several of my professors, Dr. Riggins Earl, Dr. Lisa Allen McLaurin, had an opportunity, man, to just know more about who I am and how I can affect this culture.
Well, my name is Christopher Weems. I'm currently serving as a youth pastor in the Westview community. Right now, I just left Calvary United Methodist Church, where the pastor is Kevin Hankins. I'm now currently at Bethel United Methodist Church with Dr. Elaine Crawford. serving with her, doing some great things in the community. Originally from that west side, from the Dixie Hill community. My father pastors Simpson Road Missionary Baptist Church in the Dixie Hill community. Right now I'm currently at ITC, Gammonite, going into my third year, looking forward to doing some great things, learning with people like Dr. Bennett, learning with people like Regan Zero, Mark Lomax, Vanessa Lovelace, a lot of people that, you know, really are nurturing my theology and also social ethics that we can learn and impact with our communities. Shout out to my wonderful fiance. I just got engaged, Brianna Schnell. I love her dearly. So, you know, I'm doing everything I can, you know, to be an impact in the community, be the change I want to see in the world.
Wonderful. So I got Christopher Weems. I hope I said Weems earlier. What did I say?
Okay. You got it.
Okay, I want to make sure. I'm sitting there thinking about the you guys, and I'm just excited that we got two African-American men here who are products of our schools from Lane and Payne.
That's right.
You know, and you know, y'all know that gets me to going too, because y'all know how I feel about HBCUs. I love me some HBCUs. Yes, and then to see two brothers who have actually gone and have enrolled at the Interdenominational Theological Center. I mean, that's the hotbed of Afrocentric theology and Afrocentric social ethicizing. And that just, that does something else to me, too. And then also, y'all didn't tell the reader, the listeners this. I'm talking about readers. I'll be looking at a book, gents. I ain't telling them that, man. I'm falling off. You know. But what I didn't tell them, and you all didn't tell them, is you all also are part of, you know, African-American fraternities. Andre is a member of Alpha Phi Alpha.
Shout out to Chris.
And Chris is a member of Omega Psi Phi Fraternity Incorporated.
Don't start it.
News and Talk 1380, WAOK.
The gist of the matter, Dr. Bennett is here with my two guests, Andre Lord and Chris Weems from our, you know, they're from our community, millennials, Generation Zers, and they're also products of the Interdenominational Theological Center. And they're going to talk with us and help us walk through this conversation about the debate, and in particular, about what can our African-American religious communities do to energize a demographic to help upset, remove, send back to wherever he came from. You know, he said they need to go back to where they came from, right? We need to send him back to wherever he came from. Y'all, we got to do something. We need to get a certain group involved in the conversation. But we got to pull a page from Barack Obama's playbook. I mean, he called a play that no one had seen. I don't know if he got to the line of scrimmage and saw what the defense had set up, and he saw what the DBs were. He saw what the safety was over the top. And he got up there and called an audible. But whatever he did, that play he called.
Ain't work.
Yeah.
Nah, it ain't work.
So I got two guys with me. We're going to talk about this this debate. Hey, 404-892-2703 is the number. 404-892-2703. Here is what I want to do. I want to start the discussion by, I'm going to ask Andre and I'm going to ask Chris just to, you know, from looking at what happened on Tuesday and Wednesday in Detroit, at this point in this conversation, when you're actually looking at the debates, my question is, which one of them impressed you the most? Which one impressed you the most of all the candidates on Tuesday? And I think it was Wednesday night. Mm. Which one of them impressed you all the most?
I think the person that impressed me the most right now is Elizabeth Warren.
And why? And I want to know why.
Well, Elizabeth Warren, she's passionate. And I think right now, this generation, I think what we're looking for is somebody who's authentic. Mm-hmm. I think we're looking for somebody who is charismatic. And right now, Elizabeth Warren seems very authentic, you know. And I say that because I think her policies, you know, my friend Amber Lowe and I were having this conversation, and her policies seem to be progressive. And I think that's what you get with our generation. Don't tell us, you know, you can tell us where we've been.
Right.
But right now, we want to know where we're going and how we and what we need to do to get there. And I think her progressive policies, and she has realistic funding to go with those policies. And so Elizabeth Warren right now is, you know, she seems to be the one that I think we can fight with.
Chris, what you think?
Well, you know, I think everybody's aim when they got up there was to be impressive.
Mm.
It was to be attractive. It was to see what they can do to get my vote, because, you know, your vote matters or whatever. But, you know, the three primary people that really caught my eye was, of course, Bernie Sanders. The next person was Elizabeth Warren. And finally, primarily, it was Marianne Williamson. Getting in contact, just seeing what all three of those people had to say in light of how it dealt with people ethically, as opposed to, you know, what it had to do economically. Because in a legal sense, you know, we can always address the issue from various aspects. But at the end of the day, we're not anti-white, we're anti-wrong.
So you did not say, Chris, you mentioned neither Kamala Harris nor Cory Booker.
No.
You might be suspect, man. Why you?
Well, it's not necessarily done.
Andre, I think done something to him, man. We got to find out why you ain't mentioned Kamala nor the sister from Hawaii. Well, I'm calling her sister because she's a woman of color,
right? Because you know you have people that try to play, people try to use our culture as a card, as opposed to what it can actually do to uplift our people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can lay your race down as a card. Well, you know, I'm the same color as you are, so we can play the same game. We can talk about the same things that are going on in our communities. But are you actually engaged with the things that are going on?
Uh-huh.
As opposed to somebody who is not of our own color, somebody like Bernie Sanders, who was in the thick of it during the civil rights movement, actually in the fields with us, actually down there chained and being beaten by the police. Now, again, it's okay. You know, I'm not negating. I'm not separating. Not saying that you're not a part of. Not saying that you don't embrace our culture. But in the same token, you know, I appeal to these people that had in these presidential debates, people like Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren and Marianne Williamson. You know, those people, they brought up some issues that ethically mattered to the plight of our people.
Mm. Wow. Mm. Wow. Well,
that's good.
And Dre, what you think about that? I mean,
I'm with him on that all the way, because what I feel like, you know, we learned this in Reagan's Earl class, man. When you look at folks like Cory Booker and Kamala Harris, you know, you want to take our color in a sense and use it as your card to say, oh, you need to elect me. You need to elect me because I'm of this color.
Mm-hmm.
But the truth of the matter is, I mean, are you, like he said, are you really down there with us? Like, are you down? Because, I mean, you look at Kamala Harris's track record of prosecuting, you know, us, you know what I'm saying, in California. Look at Cory Booker and how the underprivileged neighborhood in Newark, New Jersey, look how they're being treated. Let's sit down and talk to the people in those neighborhoods, in those communities where those two people serve, and let's ask them the question, are these really the people that you all want to represent us as people? Because I think right now, racism exists. Okay.
Absolutely.
But I don't know if it's a black or white issue for me. It's right or wrong.
Well, now, what you mean, though, you don't know if it's a black or white issue. Unpack that for me. What are you talking about?
Because you don't want to fight. Was it fire with fire?
Okay.
Look at what Trump says. We know he's a racist. We know he's sexist. We can't do that. We can't go back at him with racism. We can't go back at him with sexism. We can't use that, because that's what he's going to say. You know, he's going to say, well, you all are saying I'm all for white people. They're going to say, oh, well, you all are for black people. So I think at the end of the day, we got to just talk about what's right and what's wrong. You know, because I believe there are some people who are, you know, there are some Caucasians who live in some underprivileged communities. You know, what about them?
You know? Well, Dre, now let me push you, man. You're a graduate of ITC. Let me push you on something. Now, you know, y'all ITC grads, I love to talk to. Can you be charged with practicing good politics or good social ethics if you ignore the color question, especially being a young man who is actually serving one of our key communities, right, African-American communities, right. Over in Southwest Atlanta? What can we say about your politics? Are they legitimate? Would your social ethics be considered, you know, viable if you have taken the race question off the table?
Off the table. No, I don't think so. Let me say this. I don't say take it off the table.
Okay.
I don't want to take it off the table, but I just don't want us to, I don't know how you say, I guess overly use. You know, I just think that Cory Booker and Kamala Harris, you know, for me, their policies, I don't see nothing. All I see is them saying, hey, I'm black, elect me. Elect me, I'm black.
What you think, Chris?
And it's a whole nother, it stands the test of time, man. And like you say, you're talking to ITC grads, man. You got to read you some Du Bois, man. You got to understand the idea that the problem of the color line still exists.
Right.
Still exists. The problem of the color line is still there on the table. And because it's such a delicate subject, people don't want to talk about it. They don't want to get involved in it.
News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
You know, Patrick Casey is killed. All of those people that at that Walmart in El Paso, and I'm hearing that he shot his sister too. And interestingly enough, the weapon that he purchased it legally. Legally. Now that raises a whole nother set of issues we need to talk about. But Andre and Chris, I got to say this. I noticed that you all raised a question, and I'm gonna tell our audience what the question is, and I'm gonna go back to Anthony. The question is, when is somebody gonna take out a whole full page ad in the New York Times demanding that this fella get the death penalty?
Right. Yeah.
I don't want to call no names, but you know somebody did that a long time ago over some bogus, trumped up. Oh, the word slipped out my mouth. See that? Charges.
Charges, right.
Yeah. Oh, man, this is a mess down there in El Paso. 4489-22703. Let me go back to the lines Anthony has been holding. Go ahead, Anthony.
Yes. So you want me to repeat that again?
No. Go ahead. They were going to respond to your question. Go ahead.
Yeah. So yeah, Anthony. You know, we heard you, man. And I think that's the same question that you asked, Anthony. Man, you know, I've been blessed to sit down at the dinner table with folk like Jesse Jackson. And he asked the same question, man. You know, Jesse Jackson, Al Sharpton. You know, those guys have asked the same question. You know, who's going to raise up and take our place? And I think my friend Chris explained it earlier when we were online. You know, we live in a society where millennials, you know, man, everything is so instant for us. You know, man, we don't have to sit down and talk about when we going to march and how we going to march. Man, you just go straight to Instagram, Facebook, Snapchat. And, man, for you know it, man, you can have hundreds of thousands of young folk, you know, in the street marching for the cause. So, you know, the question is, you know, who or when – you know, may raise up and become this new charismatic leader. I don't really know. That, you know, that's my honest opinion. I really don't know. But I think as we talk with Dr. Bennett tonight, this next presidential debate, man, whoever's going to win the Democratic Party's nomination is going to have to mobilize millennials. They're going to have to.
Right.
What you think, Chris?
Man, Andre hit the nail on the head. That's what I was just talking about as far as, you know, what it takes. Millennials don't care.
Man,
they do not care about this grandiose, oh, this is our person, this is our leader, this is my person that's going to, because he set up this idea. The last that you probably got with that was Barack Obama.
Mm.
So when you come into this ideas of millennials, like I said, we live in a land of instant gratification. We live in a land where there's an app for everything. So there's no app to make or create your own leader. And then, however, we have replaced social skills with social media.
Mm.
We've replaced social construct with a profile.
That's right.
We've created this thing to say, like I said, we live in a Facebook, Instagram world. In other words, we're good at putting filters on things. We're good at showing the rest of the world that my life is great, even though I'm depressed.
Mm-hmm.
So, as far as waiting for that person to instill values such as Martin Luther King, to instill a value of a dream into you, waiting on people like Malcolm X to say we need to make changes by any means necessary. Waiting on a person like Marcus Garvey to say, we've cut out our own land for
That's
us
right.
and we're going to promote affirmative action.
That's right.
These millennials aren't necessarily into that mode of thinking. They're about mobilization. They're about going out. They're about making a change. But they're not waiting on a person.
No.
They're just going out and doing it. The problem is when they go out and do it and it fails, they're done with it.
I got Andre with me. I got Chris with me. And we're having a conversation about getting black millennials interested and energized. And what can we do to make that happen? And you all are helping to sort out this thing. The number is 4489-22703. I'm going to John from Texas. Hello, John.
Hey, Dean Bennett, how you doing?
Man, 250%. How you doing?
John.
Good. And shout out to the ITC alum in the building over there.
Yes, sir.
Listen, I just want to make a comment. You know, at the end of the day, my thoughts on how are we getting millennials motivated, and we talk about, they complain about they don't go to church, they don't do this, they don't do that. At the end of the day, Jesus was relatable. And at the end of the day, Jesus used different methods to bring out his message. And it's our responsibility for us as leaders to show these millennials and motivate them to make Jesus relatable and help them understand that Jesus made political moves too. Because at the end of the day, Jesus fought and spoke against the Roman Empire that was oppressing. And that's the same thing that we have to show them, that Jesus is relatable and they can do the same thing, walking in the same footsteps as Jesus. I'm going to let y'all have the conversation. I love all of y'all.
All right, John.
Oh, no, John, I'm cool. And, you know, I want to know what Andre and what Chris think about that, because clearly Jesus was very radical in the politics and some other kinds of things. And I get disturbed when I see us preaching and teaching and somehow we divorce that from social activism. That's just foolish to me. That's absolutely foolish.
That's right.
It's asinine. That's the word that comes to mind. What y'all think, gentlemen?
Oh, I'm totally with that, man. You know, Jesus was such a, you know, political radical, man. Everything that was not for the people, he was totally against it. And, you know, man, I think, you know, even like what John is saying, that when we as the church re-energize the people and show them, you know, this is the way it should be. And we don't have to always do it the way it, you know, it's been done for 40, 50, 60 years in order to get the message across. You can do things differently to get the message across. But I think the message, you know, needs to get across, you know, that Jesus died for the least and the lost. And I think that's still the cause. And I think the church needs to push that cause, even in this political arena, you know. And we got to be like Jesus. We got to go into 1600 and overturn the tables in order to get somebody's attention.
All right.
Well, go ahead. Not only was Jesus relatable, Jesus wasn't necessarily in the church. Jesus.
I hear you. Go ahead.
Jesus's radical reform was taking place in the streets. It was taking place out with prostitutes, gangbangers,
tax collectors. That's exactly right.
And because that dynamic
liquor drinkers.
Exactly.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying?
Publicans and sinners.
That's a whole nother conversation.
Liquor drinkers.
But he was involved.
Crackheads.
He was involved with those people that were counted out, the lost, the oppressed, those people that had a dynamic that did not identify with Christian or not, I shouldn't say back in that particular period of time, that did not identify with their values that they were practicing in religion. Wow. What we need to take and learn from that and put it in modern day sense with our millennials is, I believe that the church folk need to understand and try to reach the millennials from a secular standpoint.
Okay.
As opposed to just trying to throw religion in their face and saying this is the right way to do it. It is going to take the wisdom of the elders, but it's going to take the young people's energy. So they need the people in the church.
Okay, Coleman. Okay, Coleman.
Yeah. It's going to take the young people's energy to make it happen, and the millennials are not going to just openly and willingly come to the church because the church has told them this is how you got to do it. Wow. And the people in the church don't even have a clue.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.